Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Good morning. I'm Albert Morales, your host and managing partner of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. Our nation's schools are the foundation for an economic engine that helps to ensure this country's competitive advantage in the global marketplace. With the bipartisan passage of the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001, the U.S. Department of Education, working with its state and local partners, has dedicated itself to promoting educational excellence and access in every corner of the country. One critical way to do this is by providing its partner institutions with accurate, timely, and useful grant, loan, and financial management information and support that promotes performance and accountability. With us this morning to discuss this critical federal-state partnership is our special guest, Lawrence Warder, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Education. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Al. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
And also joining us this morning in our conversation from IBM is Denise Rabin, partner in IBM's financial management practice. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, Al.
Larry, to start off, let's talk a little bit about the Department of Education specifically. Could you share with us a sense of the history, mission, and the activities of the U.S. Department of Education? When was it created and what's its mission today?
Well, Al, the history of the department can be traced back as far as 1867, where originally the federal role was one of really statistical data collection and reporting. In terms of being a cabinet agency, it became a cabinet agency in 1980 by an act of Congress, and prior to that had been part of health, education, and welfare. It became a cabinet-level agency when I think our country began to believe that education was an incredibly important part of our strategic competitiveness as a nation. Certainly Sputnik woke us up in the 50s. The Cold War became a technology Cold War, and we look at the transition into the knowledge age from strictly the manufacturing age that we were in. Today, the primary mission of the department is to implement the No Child Left Behind Act. It's in the process of reauthorization as we speak. And it's really focused on getting all of our students proficient by 2014, increasing the rigor of math and science in our curricula, and improving our competitiveness in the world economy.
Can you give us a sense of scale of the department? How is it organized? What's the size of the budget? And how many employees work within the education department?
Well, we're a somewhat unique department in the sense that we're very large from a budget point of view with expenditures of nearly $100 billion. But with that, we're only 4,200 employees, and less than 2% of that budget is spent on the department administering and managing this set of processes. About 58% of our budget is spent on post-secondary issues, those issues being direct grants to institutions or, for the larger part, it's loans to students. So in the past year, we've made loans to about 10 million students. Another 36% supports our secondary and elementary education programs, and those are grants to states and local school systems directly. 5% would be for things like research and information dissemination and such things as that. And then again, less than 2% we spend ourselves on administering and managing this process.
Larry, now that you've provided us with a sense of the larger organization, could you tell us more about your area and specific role within the department? For example, what are your specific responsibilities and duties as a chief financial officer?
Well, the chief financial officer set of responsibilities are really defined by the Chief Financial Officer Act and also outlined by OMB. And we have a number of responsibilities, certainly compliance with accounting standards being one of those, financial systems oversight, internal control management, organizational oversight and program operation oversight. Certainly asset management is important. And then lastly, compliance with laws and regs. Okay, the Department of the Chief Financial Officer is organized into six primary components. the financial management operations, which produces our statements and our various financial reports, the financial systems operations, which supports our technology and the applications with which we process all of this data, financial improvement and post-audit operations, and that's one to help our grantees perform their functions better and to resolve the audits that do occur out in the various grantee organizations. Contracts and acquisition management, which is actually what most people would call a purchasing organization. And then lastly, grants policy and oversight. So we have responsibility for administering the policies around discretionary grants.
That's interesting, Larry. Could you elaborate more on the size of your staff and budget?
Yes, we do that with 270 employees, and we have a budget of about $50 million.
Great. Now, as Chief Financial Officer, tell us what are the top three challenges that you face in your position, and how have you addressed those challenges?
We have a set of responsibilities and challenges, which I'll call the classic financial officer or controllership kinds of responsibilities. Those be retrospective. And that's being responsible for the historic records, for financial statements, for the audits of the department, compliance with standards, getting clean audit opinions, etc. Then we have another set of responsibilities, which are really around operating today, and that's how are we spending our resources as a department? Are we proper and timely in getting grants awarded and getting funds out to the grantees? And are we really appropriately allocating our human resources? So are we spending our people on the highest and most important issues? Then there are some forward-looking, and I'll call them prospective, responsibilities. And in that case, for example, we are completing, and it's in a period of review of our strategic plan for the department. And I was responsible for leading our effort on the strategic plan. So it's a forward-looking. That's an important one. We're working on streamlining the business processes around these basic functions, grant making, et cetera, and improving our controls and our risk management processes. So those are all forward-looking in the sense of having an impact on operations as we go forward.
Larry, prior to us beginning the show here, we had an opportunity to talk about how you got started, and we both sort of shared the stories, our common career paths of being with starting with one of the Big Eight accounting firms. I'm curious, how did you get started in education and in public service?
Well, it's very interesting. I had a long and interesting career in industry, followed by 33 years in consulting. But along the way, I developed a strong interest in education, having had what I consider a very good education in a public school environment, but having participated in several public school environments through my children being raised, I didn't see the same set of standards and quality that I got. And these were in more affluent neighborhoods than I was raised in and in areas that supposedly had the best school systems. I just kind of filed that away and said my post-career effort is going to be spent on the education system of this country one way or another. So after retirement, I worked with Advanced Placement Strategies, which is geared towards incentivizing students, particularly minority and non-English language as an original language students, to take more advanced placement courses, realize that they can actually perform at a college level, incentivize them and the school systems to provide these programs, and pay on a success rate. Also worked with the University of Texas and the chancellor there on a number of his special items and was the first outside member of their risk management and compliance task force. So I had an interest and I said I was going to do this when I retired, and this, the only way they got me back to work was because it's education.
That's great. So how has your previous experience both in industry and in consulting prepared you for your current leadership role as the CFO of the Department of Education, and how has it informed your approach and your style?
Well, as a consultant, you don't have direct authority over much of anything when you're working in a client. You have a lot of responsibility to help the client get results, but very little authority. So you have to develop a persuasive style. You have to get your facts right. You have to deal with people on a very even-handed basis, and you have to build consensus. You can't just dictate. Well, you deal with the organization of partners, which is what I worked inside, and managing a group of partners takes much the same kind of disciplines. You can't dictate. You've got to lead through consensus building and through, obviously, direction that people can accept and understand. Working in the Department of Education with a lot of very high talent people who also have a variety of interests presents much the same kind of challenges.
Great. How is the Department of Education integrating budget and performance information? We will ask Larry Warder, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Education, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.